Welcome back to the Bits and Bumps podcast. Penny Wilson here, and today I am joined by a very special guest, Dr. Wendy Sexton. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Penny.
Now, we are very old friends, Wendy and I, and we have known each other since the very first day of medical school, so we go way back, and I'm very glad to have her with me today. And we are going to be talking about an intersection of our special interests, which is travel medicine and pregnancy. So, as you all know, I do a bit of obstetrics, and Wendy has done a bit of obstetrics as well, but also has an interest in travel med. So I'll let her explain her background.
Thanks, Penny. I'm also a GP. I have done procedural GP obstetrics in the past, but since then I have moved on to some other areas, including travel and tropical medicine and emergency medicine.
Great. So let's get started. Tell me, Wendy, is this actually a topic that's important? Do pregnant women travel all that much? And if so, where are they going?
Well, yes, I think we'd all probably, even though it might be something that we don't see every day in our practice, there are patients who are travelling for various reasons. It might be that they have a wedding to attend that might be overseas, destination wedding. They might be travelling for work. They might be going to see friends and family, or it might be baby moon.
Yeah, the baby moon's a common one, isn't it? Trying to get that last holiday out of the system before the new baby comes along.
For sure.
And it seems to be oftentimes in travel medicine in general, patients will come into their GP and they'll say a throwaway line about, going on a trip and they just need a vaccination next week before they go next week. But there's actually a lot more to a travel medicine consult than that, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah.
Ideally, we'd like to see someone with time enough to do the things that are required. A lot of us think that it is just about vaccines and malaria or other medications and specific things. However, to do a really comprehensive assessment, you can't really do it tagged on at the end of a GP consult in 2 minutes. We'd really like to see people 6 to 8 weeks before they go. It's really important that we know exactly where they're going, exactly when they're going, so a detailed itinerary is necessary. If we are seeing people less than that time frame, it is still worthwhile, but we may not be able to achieve everything that we need to.
Yeah, I guess the good thing about our pregnant patients is we kind of have them a bit captive. So we are seeing them fairly regularly along the way. So hopefully we can get a bit of a heads up that they're planning to travel well in advance that they're actually going.
Yes, which is great. You asked before about where people are going.
Yeah.
The ABS data is quite interesting. A lot of Australians are heading to places like New Zealand and Indonesia. Obviously, location makes sense for that. People are also travelling to other destinations in Southeast Asia, and then Europe and the UK and the US are quite common. Places that are probably come to mind as higher risk for any traveller, but particularly pregnant travellers, like Africa, are less common, but it still does happen.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And particularly with our population inherently being very diverse and coming from quite a range of different ethnic backgrounds, then, people may be returning home to visit their friends and family, I guess, as well as having holidays.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe we can talk about some of the general travel concepts and how they apply to pregnant women. So what about the flight itself? What are we going to tell people about that?
So there are some things that make sense and there are some things that are restrictions by the airline industry. Mm. So if it's an uncomplicated pregnancy, as a general rule, you can't fly beyond a certain number of weeks. That does vary a little bit depending on whether it's a domestic or an international flight. And obviously the majority of our international flights from Australia are quite long.
Yeah.
And that plays into that as well. If there are complications in the pregnancy or it's a more high-risk pregnancy, then there are different restrictions again. And we can give general guidelines, but you do need to check with the airline itself.
Yeah, so I'm quite accustomed to the request to do fitness to fly certificates for women who are pregnant and who are planning to fly, mostly domestically. Mm. And all the different airlines do have the required certification on their website.
Yes.
And we can post the links up on the blog page at bitsandbumps.org with some of those common airlines in Australia. But I think oftentimes if it's an uncomplicated pregnancy and it's less than 36 weeks and it's a domestic flight, all that's needed is a certificate saying the due date and that the pregnancy is uncomplicated. Yes. But anything beyond that, really just check with the airline.
Yes, for sure.
And then when they're on the flight, now we know pregnant women are at risk of DVT more so than mm-hmm. patients who aren't pregnant. So TED stockings, aspirin, Clexane, what are we going to tell people?
Well, I guess the general information about DVT risk is, yes, flying is a risk. And we're specifically talking about flights longer than 4 hours. Some would argue 6 hours, but certainly in that sort of ballpark. Some of the other evidence we know is that people sitting in an aisle seat are less likely to have a DVT than someone sitting in a window or a middle seat, which is purely about the ability to get up, stretch, a bit more leg room and movement.
Yeah.
So as far as what would I advise someone, I would advise them to ideally sit in an aisle seat and that they need to do their leg exercises. They need to get up and walk around frequently, and TED stockings are recommended.
Mm.
Aspirin does nothing.
Yep. And I guess the question about more heavy-duty anticoagulants like Clexane would depend on their background risk. So if they had a history of thromboembolism or, you know, particular risk factors from their medical perspective or their obstetric perspective, then that would be something you'd think about.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a common sense approach.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So what about in terms of the timing within the pregnancy?
Mm.
What do you tell your patients?
Well, certainly within those restrictions we've already mentioned, most people are going to be able to enjoy a holiday, if that's the reason for travel, and be lowest risk in the second trimester.
Yeah.
Most things you'll read will recommend that. Sometimes people do need to travel in the first trimester, and that can be okay, but you need to bear in mind the fact that, you know, you're also potentially dealing with hyperemesis and an unsighted pregnancy very early on, and also the issue of potential miscarriage.
Yeah. So I guess the second trimester is that sweet spot between when they're feeling sick, potentially at risk of threatened pregnancy loss, but before they get really heavy and, you know, have those discomforts at the other end as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think the other thing that I like to impress upon people is that if they're travelling beyond the age of viability, there's a whole extra lot of concerns or risks to keep in mind. If people are travelling beyond sort of 24, 25 weeks and they're travelling overseas to an area where they don't have access to that country's public health system, I guess we just need to think about what the scenario would be if the worst case scenario happened and they had a very preterm birth, for instance, or they went into threatened preterm labour. What's your understanding of that scenario?
Well, I guess all travellers should have travel insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you need to or can afford to travel, it's not negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
If you're pregnant, it takes out some of the stress of being able to do that. Certainly, you can take out travel insurance, and all the policies are different, so you'd need to discuss that with the insurance companies. But they will cover you as the mother. Mm-hmm. You're the one insured. The problem becomes if you are no longer just the only one and you do have a preterm birth. Then you've got a baby who's not insured, and that can be extremely stressful in any circumstance, but now you've got a financial considerations as well.
Yeah. You know, if you're in a hospital or a country where the health service is not as up to scratch or is not as advanced as it would be back home, and then if you end up needing your baby to be in a neonatal ICU for a prolonged period of time, that's going to be very expensive. So, look, I generally advise my patients who are over 24, 25 weeks to really reconsider their need to have an overseas holiday. And I would say have your baby moon in Broome. Don't go to Bali, because if something happens in Broome, we will take very good care of you.
That sounds entirely reasonable. And I think it's part of the discussion that's often missed.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so what will people do if they run into troubles while they're travelling overseas and they're pregnant?
Well, if it's anything that would concern you at home, then you would still want to seek medical advice.
Yeah.
And it depends where you are. I mean, if you're in somewhere like New Zealand or the UK, then you just access their health system and you can expect comparable care to here.
Yeah.
The issue becomes if you're in a country where the services are generally of a different standard, there may or may not be the option of going to an international clinic where there are doctors who give the same treatment that you would get at home. Mm. So I would always advise anyone travelling overseas, but particularly if you're pregnant or got kids or whatever, to know where those clinics are that you can access them. Often you can find that there is information available via the Australian Embassy, so you can contact them and they can tell you where these clinics are. That is, you know, an option as well.
Mm. So be a little bit more prepared, I guess, than you might be when it was just you to worry about. Now you've got, you know, you and the baby on board. And the other concept there is taking a medical kit that you might need.
Mm-hmm.
So medications, for instance, or...
So there are things that you should be prepared for. The common issues in pregnancy, and that includes nausea, constipation, reflux, those sorts of things are common.
Mm.
And there are simple over-the-counter things that you can take with you. I guess the most common thing that happens to the majority of travellers is not what everybody thinks about. It's actually not getting malaria or getting Zika virus or one of those kind of issues. It's actually getting gastro or a respiratory tract infection.
Yeah. And the other one, I suppose, for women in particular and pregnant women is cystitis or urinary tract infections.
Yeah. And thrush.
Thrush. So as the GP, having a chat to people about stocking up their kit with some, you know, antibiotics to take if those things do occur, or general symptomatic management for those simple respiratory viruses or for the gastro.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we've started to speak then about infectious diseases. So I guess with our patients, there are a lot of them who are going to Bali or Indonesia, waterborne infections and gastro, big problem. Are there any specific things that we can advise there or things that are different for our pregnant patients compared to our regular patients?
Well, the basic general recommendation goes for all patients, and that is about food and water safety and hand hygiene.
Mm.
They do take you a long way. So, yes, your water source needs to be safe, and for a lot of countries that does mean bottled water or equivalent. And food, you want food that's been freshly prepared, not sitting around, that's cooked or peelable or, you know, appropriate in other ways. So that's the food and water. Good hand hygiene, take some alcohol hand gel with you if you can't always wash your hands. But the advice overall is quite similar.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Absolutely.
You want to enjoy your holiday.
Definitely.
You don't want to end up unwell while you're away.
And with the sort of mosquito-borne viruses, you know, is it safe for a pregnant woman to be slathering herself in DEET?
Well, it's always risk-benefit, isn't it?
Mm.
And essentially you've got the options to, one, cover up, which a lot of women are reluctant to take medication of any sort, even if we've got good data about it being safe. But, yes, to answer your question, yes, you should be using DEET and, yes, it is safe in pregnancy. But you can also do the other things like avoiding perfumes that attract mosquitoes, covering up, particularly depending on what you're trying to avoid, dengue biting mosquitoes being more of a problem during the day and malaria in the evening.
Mm.
Not that there is malaria currently in Bali. But, you know, you need to take sensible precautions. Depending on where you are, you may or may not need mosquito nets as well.
Yeah.
So barriers versus medication, both can be appropriate.
Yeah, and using fans, air conditioning,
fly
screens, all of that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah.
Good advice. Okay, so what about then the specific infectious diseases? What about malaria?
Okay, so malaria is a big problem and it's an even bigger problem in pregnancy.
Yeah.
Obviously, you need to know the exact itinerary to know whether the patient is at risk of malaria or not. So there are some good available searchable sites and information, including maps. These include things like the CDC's website, the Yellow Book, which is about travel medicine. The NHS has a site called Fit for Travel, which I quite like to use because it's got quite easy to navigate maps. And then there are a number of other resources. You can generally get that information in your GP software as well. So they're good places to start about, is the patient at risk of malaria or not?
Yeah, and we'll chuck those resources up on the website as well.
Yeah. If you decide that there is malaria, or you know that there is malaria risk, and we've talked about prevention already, then we need to have the discussion about malaria prophylaxis. Probably should back up though. The more important part about all of this is, as does the person really need to go on the trip?
Absolutely, yeah.
And if they are going to somewhere that is high risk for malaria, say West Africa, I would be strongly recommending that they actually reconsider their need to travel.
Yep. Okay.
Because it is such a big problem, the issue with malaria is that it's usually more severe and it affects the placenta. So you get sequestration of the malaria parasites in the placenta, which can cause a huge amount of problems with placental function and fetal death.
That sounds ultimately absolutely awful.
Mm.
Yeah.
So talking about malaria prophylaxis, there are only a few options of medications to choose from in general, but in pregnancy we're restricted essentially to a couple of medications.
Yep.
So chloroquine is safe to take in pregnancy. Unfortunately, there are very few places in the world where that's actually an effective anti-malarial anyway.
That's right, because it's going to be the combination of what's safe in pregnancy and what the local resistance patterns are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So as a general rule, we've got the most information about mefloquine, or what most people know as Larium in Australia, which is a once-a-week medication, and we have good data to say that that is okay to take in pregnancy. So that would be the most common recommendation. There are some reasons not to give mefloquine in general. So people are quite worried about the psychiatric potential side effects. For the majority of people, these are not a problem, but if they are a problem, they're usually a big problem.
Mm.
So we do need to be careful in people who've got a history of pre-existing depression or current depression in pregnancy. Mm. And I usually like to give people a trial before they, you know, go overseas on a new medication anyway.
Yeah, and we, I guess, know that pregnancy is a high-risk time for mental illness to become unmasked anyway.
Yes.
So double caution there.
Yeah. Some travel specialists have their own feeling about use of Malarone in pregnancy. However, this is an off-label use and needs. I would be consulting with a travel specialist on this particular issue if you decided mefloquine was not the right choice for your patient.
Yeah.
But again, I just need to underline that fact that really we want to avoid people's exposure to malaria as much as possible in pregnancy.
And you were telling me earlier that a particularly high-risk group would be the group that goes back to a malaria area that maybe they've come from originally and had some kind of inherent immunity to, but that tends to wane over time. Is that right?
That's right. So people growing up in malaria area are usually exposed to malaria in the first few years of life, and over time they develop some degree of immunity that requires repeated exposure to be maintained. And thankfully, due to some of the success of the malaria reduction programs around the world, people are getting it later and more severe disease. However, a lot of people who've come from these areas think that if they go back, they still are immune. But we want to just talk to them, I guess, about the fact that they are actually at really high risk of becoming unwell.
Mm.
Malaria tends to be worse in the first and second pregnancies.
Mm.
And then, again, if you're a repeated exposure, you develop a bit of immunity.
Mm.
But most of the people we're seeing are not in that that category.
Yeah, okay. Mm. What about yellow fever?
Yes, so yellow fever is a specific thing that we want to prevent. It's mosquito-borne. It happens in South America and Africa primarily.
Mm-hmm.
There is a legal requirement around yellow fever because you do need to have your yellow fever card or a waiver to show if you're travelling to these areas. Again, yellow fever is can be a very serious disease and has a significant mortality. So it is another reason to advise women to avoid
travel where possible.
Yeah. But, for example, if they did need to travel and they're not vaccinated for yellow fever, you then need to make a decision about vaccination or not. As a general rule, we advise that live vaccines should not be given in pregnancy. Yellow fever is a live vaccine, so it's got risks associated with that. However, it does need to be a very tailored individual risk assessment about whether we do give that vaccine or whether we give a waiver, and really good advice about avoiding mosquitoes essentially while they're there.
Yeah.
I would, again, probably be talking to a travel specialist about that.
Yep, good advice. The topical mosquito virus, of course, is the Zika.
Yes.
And a lot has been said about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything further to add?
Don't get bitten by mosquitoes.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of hype and a lot of concern, some of it probably warranted. We've seen a number of recommendations over time about avoiding travel to South America for within 2 years of trying for a pregnancy. We now know a lot more about the virus. That's one of these things that we know because of its widespread existence now. And of course the concern about its effect on the fetal development is not insignificant. So yes, don't get bitten. Even if your partner has been potentially affected and come back, there's a risk of transmission through any bodily fluids. So I think it needs a fairly careful assessment about your need to travel.
Okay, and I guess that general advice about not being bitten applies to dengue as well.
Yes, all of them.
Because that is a nasty disease at any time of the day, no matter if you're pregnant or not.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, so talking more generally about vaccines then, you said live vaccines not generally recommended.
Mm-hmm.
Which of the common vaccines for travel are live and which aren't?
Okay, so measles, mumps and rubella.
Yeah.
Which we would generally give after pregnancy here. So we wouldn't be recommending that as a general rule. Then some of the typhoid, the oral typhoid vaccine, some of the oral vaccines, the yellow fever, they would be the major vaccines to consider.
Yep. But of course there are certain vaccines that we want all of our pregnant patients to have, regardless of their travel plans, and they're things like influenza and later on in pregnancy the pertussis vaccine as well, which includes tetanus.
Yes, absolutely. In countries where tetanus is much more of a problem because of the vaccination schedules, all pregnant women do get it for the tetanus component in the second, third trimester anyway, so that there's antibodies for the baby. Whereas we're primarily giving it here for the pertussis component.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. So definitely would be highly recommending those for all travelling women.
Okay. Is there anything else to add about travel and pregnancy?
Look, I think the better planning that you have, the more tailored advice that's appropriate for your patient you can give. Always reconsider the need for travel. Why is this person traveling now? How long are they traveling for? Where are they going? Are they well? Are there any problems with their pregnancy? We're really about risk reduction. So if they run into trouble while they're there, what is their, are they covered for insurance? Do they have the right paperwork? Do they know where to access care and assistance? And then we really want people who do travel when they're pregnant to have a great time.
Yep.
So by talking about this and having the consult, hopefully people can be prepared to treat themselves for minor problems and stay well while they're away.
That sounds like excellent advice. Thank you so much, Dr. Wendy Sexton.
Thanks, Penny. It's been great.
Yeah. So as always, we'll put the links and the resources up on the blog site. And as always, we welcome any feedback or comments on the Twitter at Bits and Bumps or on the website bitsandbumps.org. So we will see you next time.
Bye.